charity and virtue were the same. Just as truth does not grow, so neither does virtue grow, for it has its due proportions and is complete. You need not, therefore, wonder what goods are equal, both those which are to be deliberately chosen and those which circumstances have imposed. For if you once adopt the view that they are unequal, deeming, for instance, a brave endurance of torture as among the lesser goods, you will be including it among the evils also. You will pronounce Socrates unhappy in his prison, Cato unhappy when he reopens his wounds with more courage than he allowed in inflicting them, and Regulus the most ill-starred of all, when he pays the penalty for keeping his word, even with his enemies. And yet no man, even the most effeminate person in the world, has ever dared to maintain such an opinion. For though such persons deny that a man like Regulus is happy, yet for all that, they also deny that he is wretched. The earlier academics do indeed admit that a man is happy even amid such tortures, but do not admit that he is completely or fully happy. With this view we cannot in any wise agree, for unless a man is happy, he has not attained the supreme good, and the good which is supreme admits of no higher degree. If only virtue exists within this man, and if adversity does not impair his virtue, and if, though the body be injured, the virtue abides unharmed. And it does abide. For I understand virtue to be high-spirited and exalted, so that it is aroused by anything that molests it. This spirit, which young men of noble breeding often assume, when they are so deeply stirred by the beauty of some honorable object that they despise all the gifts of chance, is assuredly infused in us and communicated to us by wisdom. Wisdom will bring the conviction that there is but one good, that which is honorable, that this can neither be shortened nor extended, any more than a carpenter's rule with which straight lines are tested can be bent. Any change in the rule means spoiling the straight line. Applying, therefore, this same figure to virtue, we shall say, virtue also is straight, and admits of no bending. What can be made more tense than a thing which is already rigid? Such is virtue, which passes judgment on everything, but nothing passes judgment on virtue. And if this rule, virtue, cannot itself be made more straight, neither can the things created by virtue be in one case straighter, and in another less straight, for they must necessarily correspond to virtue. Hence they are equal. What, you say, do you call reclining at a banquet and submitting to torture equally good? Does this seem surprising to you? You may be still more surprised at the following, that reclining at a banquet is an evil, while reclining on the rack is a good, if the former act is done in a shameful, and the latter in an honorable manner. It is not the material that makes these actions good or bad, it is the virtue. All acts in which virtue has disclosed itself are of the same measure and value. At this moment, the man who measures the souls of all men by his own is shaking his fist in my face, because I hold that there is a parity between the goods involved in the case of one who passes sentence honorably and of one who suffers sentence honorably, or because I hold that there is a parity between the goods of one who celebrates a triumph and of one who, unconquered in spirit, is carried before the victor's chariot. For such critics think that whatever they themselves cannot do is not done. They pass judgment on virtue in the light of their own weaknesses. Why do you marvel if it helps a man and on occasion even pleases him, to be burned, wounded, slain, or bound in prison. To a luxurious man, a simple life is a penalty. To a lazy man, work is punishment. The dandy pities the diligent man. To the slothful, studies are torture. Similarly, we regard those things with respect to which we are all infirm of disposition as hard and beyond endurance, forgetting what a torment it is to many men to abstain from wine, or to be routed from their beds at break of day. These actions are not essentially difficult. It is we ourselves that are soft and flabby. We must pass judgment concerning great matters with greatness of soul. Otherwise, that which is really our fault will seem to be their fault. So it is that certain objects which are perfectly straight, when sunk in water, appear to the onlooker as bent or broken off. It matters not only what you see, but with what eyes you see it. Our souls are too dull of vision to perceive the truth. But give me an unspoiled and sturdy-minded young man. He will pronounce more fortunate one who sustains on unbending shoulders the whole weight of adversity, who stands out superior to fortune. It is not a cause for wonder that one is not tossed about when the weather is calm. Reserve your wonderment for cases where a man is lifted up when all others sink, and keeps his footing when all others are prostrate. What element of evil is there in torture and in the other things which we call hardships? It seems to me that there is this evil, that the mind sags and bends and collapses. But none of these things can happen to the sage. He stands erect under any load. Nothing can subdue him. Nothing that must be endured annoys him. For he does not complain that he has been struck by that which can strike any man. He knows his own strength. He knows that he was born to carry burdens. I do not withdraw the wise man from the category of man, nor do I deny to him the sense of pain as though he were a rock that has no feelings at all. I remember that he is made up of two.